I thought at the end of the podcast we could decide what we
Yeah.
like, and Neil could explain why we're wrong. So that could be like a,
Okay.
you know, a little nod to the audience there about what might be coming up.
Hi, this is Steve, aka at AllAnthar on Twitter, and here are some more of my gaming vexes. Hello. In this episode, a group of us got together to talk about complexity in TTRPGs. What is it? What do we think of it? And how much do we like in our games? The topic came up off the back of a series of Earthdawn 4E that I ran over the latter part of 2020. I've also had a soft spot for Earthdawn and played quite a bit of it before I entered the Deep Freeze, TM, in 2002. Alongside a battered copy of RQ2 and Cults of Prax, Earthdawn and a couple of supplements were the only things that survived the Great Cull, when I sold off almost all my RPG and wargaming stuff to buy a motorbike. Don't ask. If you want more detail on Earthdawn, I recommend you listen to What Would the Smart Party Do, episodes 116 and 117, when they go into the history and setting of the game and bag a great interview with the lead designer, Lou Prosperi. If you want to go much deeper, there's also a great podcast, The Earthdawn Survival Guide, co-hosted by the current designer, Josh Harrison. So when I thawed out over the Christmas of 2018, it was natural that I wanted to revisit the land of Barsave with new players. When the call went out, I found that I had enough players for two groups, so I ran both through the Infected scenario, an early Robin D. Laws creation, over Roll20, with each group playing on alternate weeks. Running this game taught me several things about complexity in gaming. I'm a sucker for bells and whistles on virtual tabletops, and the official Earthdawn character sheet on Roll20 has more bells and whistles than you can shake a thread item at. Earthdawn has seen very few changes over the years. Although the base mechanic is simple enough, the implementation often requires several rolls to get to a result. The official sheet seemed to offer a solution to this, in that it automates a lot of the rolls and record keeping. I say seemed to, as in reality the sheet itself had its own learning curve that eventually defeated all of us in play. So we stripped things back to a much more basic sheet, but that exposed us to the full weight of the system. The original design premise of the game was to use every polyhedral dice, both to smooth out the probability curve of rolls, but also because it's fun to roll dice, especially ones that don't get used very often. D20 plus D12 plus D10 plus D8 anyone? On top of this, if you roll the maximum on a dice, you roll again and add it to the result. So results can be huge. And this is fun in person, as you roll your dice with bated breath, your friends cheering you on, hoping for those exploding dice to take down the evil horror. But over a VTT, even with 3D dice and all that, that element of fun is lost. All you're really looking for is a number to pop up in the chat. Add to this the fact that often multiple rolls are needed to achieve a single outcome, and this can be a bit of a fun bottleneck. So although we enjoyed our time in Barsave, and I'd like to go back there again, it'll be through the lens of another rule set. Apparently, there's a 13th Age version out there that I'm going to look into. So, I hope you enjoy the conversation about complexity in gaming. My thanks to Neil, at Old Scouser RPing, Martin, at MCookie123, and of course to Doc, at Drakawi, who stepped in to MC this particular discussion, as he'd suggested the topic in the first place. Get ready. So, Doc.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, everybody. Thank you particularly to Steve for inviting me to MC this particular podcast, mostly just to get me to shut up and ask questions rather than talking. We'll see if that works. A quick introduction. I've always been interested in complexity in games. I've played hugely complex war games. My home group has always favoured 3.5 D&D and Pathfinder, but I've found that when I spread out onto the internet, I discovered I was derided as a dinosaur. I'm keen to find out a bit more about complexity, what we all mean about it, and can it ever be a good thing? So let's start with, what do we mean when we say a game is complex?
In my own mind,
You've got complexity of character creation. You've got complexity of game mechanic, and you've got complexity of setting. And I think if you, and obviously various combinations of all three. Personally, I think, and I don't want to spoilers, but I like complexity of character creation. I think that is something I really enjoy. Complexity of setting, I think, I think turned me off a little bit sometimes. And complexity of mechanic, I know what Doc's going to say about Glorantha, but complexity of mechanic, that's, again, I find that a little off-putting sometimes. So there we go. I've staked my territory.
For me, of those three, first and the third, so character creation and setting, which you can enjoy independently of the interactive gaming experience, isn't there? Okay. You can sit, lonely fun, you know, creating your characters, happy days. On the other end, you can read all those endless books about Glorantha till you're blue in the face, and you can do that yourself, and that's fine. And then when you get into the game, you don't have to bring all that forward, obviously. But you can if you wish, like stirrups in Prax, etc.
Not bitter.
But I think when you talk about complexity in gameplay, I think that's where you're trying to mediate between different people's expectations and different people's comfort levels. I think that's really where the rubber meets the road, isn't it, as far as that goes. So what do you think?
I generally, that's right. I mean, I was going to break it down into, I guess, like system and the game itself, the setting, because you can have a lot of complexity in the adventure as well. So I think that's another aspect where when you're actually in play, you can have some very complex, very sophisticated adventures, multi-layered, lots of different interactions and NPCs, and that's the other thing. So I think there's many different elements to complexity. I think when we talk about RPGs, I think your natural inclination to think about system, really. I think that's the first thing that comes into my mind. What I find interesting about it is, I think back in the day, you know, in the 80s, certainly, when I was much, much younger and had a full head of hair. I'm sure I'm not the only one who could say that. I don't think complexity in the way we think of it now, even the way we're talking about it now, was ever a consideration. I just don't think it was a thing that, certainly, like if I look at the games that I was involved with, I can't ever remember thinking about a game of, oh, this looks too complex, too simple like that. You just got the game, think this looks great, looks really interesting. I don't even think... Certainly, I mean, this is my experience, so it may well be different for everyone else. I'm not overly analytical about systems, balance, and stuff like that. So it's just something grabbed me, complex or simple or whatever. You know, it was never an issue. It was never a thing. That wasn't part of the preference of why you pick.
But I think maybe you wouldn't say complex, but you'd say realistic, wouldn't you? I mean, look at the old White Dwarf things. It was, you would sit there mocking Dungeons and Dragons for being so unrealistic for a variety of things. And I think in some ways that tended to be associated with complexity. I mean, we talked about character sheets. I mean, you know, obviously the masters of podcasting, the Smart Party, were doing a thing on this very recently about skills. And, you know, it was how many skills, how many different aspects do you need to be able to pick to be able to create an individual character? And are you better off if you've got a list of 120 skills? Is that a better game? Does that make you like the character sheet more than if you just got six attributes that you're going to roll against?
I don't think skills in themselves add, I mean, they add complexity. I don't necessarily think they make characters more distinct, or they give you different things in the game. But one of the things I've always struggled with, so, you know, I love old style D&D games, which generally don't have skills. But when I play games that have skills, I can see, you know, they do bring a lot to the game. And it's just a different play style. And I do love that simplicity of not having to think about skills and just dealing with situations either more narratively or just picking something really simple from the character sheet, or even just assigning a random, you know, 1 in 6 chance or whatever and go with it.
I mean, I've come from the other side of things, because coming from games like RuneQuest and BRP and other stuff, so Earthdawn being an example, you're going from lots of skills to an OSE or an OSR game, like Old School Essentials, where you've got no skills. And actually, that's a complete mind shift you have to take. So I would say that from a system perspective, you've got lots of skills. It makes things easier, routine. You can say, do you have a skill in that area? If you don't, you can't do it, okay? Or you're rubbish at it, or whatever. Or you've got a 1% chance of something. Whereas in OSR type games, you have to, it's more thinking required on the GM and the player side to say, actually, how do we come up with a rule in that enables this thing to happen? So there's a lot more freedom there. So it's more, you could argue that's more complicated in terms of the load and during the gameplay. I'm actually preferring that now, that freedom and openness rather than lots of skills.
Yeah,
I think you can say that, yeah, it's open and free. And it also, I suppose the complexity there is, it's very much more collaborative. And so there's a kind of hidden complexity there because you've got to manage that collaboration so it doesn't, you know, turn some players off because they feel they're not getting like a fair deal or whatever. So there's definitely a layer of complexity there. It's just not written down.
I think that's really important. I think the rule of cool DMs. I remember playing in a game which I played with both my sons. And you know, this is a convention game, and the GM was saying, "Hey, you know, I'm really into rulings, not rules. Rule of cool is the most important one." And my younger son and this other player absolutely loved it. They're having a great time. You know, dragon attacks, they jump on the dragon's back and fly it up and use the dragon to take out another. And me and my older son are just sort of eye-rolling at each other and going, sorry, it's completely arbitrary. It's just, who can think of a really cool idea? I don't know whether, do you ever read the Dancers at the End of Time, the sort of Michael Moorcock book?
Where
they've got these rings that can just do anything, and what happens when you can just do anything. And, you know, I think, as you've all said, that introduces, it doesn't stop things being complicated, but it's a different setup. And I don't know, I sometimes find that.
Well, I think it's about, so there's a thing you'll often hear people say when they're having this kind of conversation about skills versus, you know, no skills, and the thing about where the players look for the solution, the problem they're facing. So if you've got a very well-defined, almost like coded kind of system.
Highly specified system.
Exactly, yeah. You know, the players will go, right, I'm going to try and do this. And you know, what skills have I got, or what abilities allow me to do that thing? Whereas in an old school game, or not just old school games specifically, but that tends to be the type where you don't have skills rigidly defined and those mechanics rigidly defined, players can try to do anything. They can still try to do stuff with in the other model, but because they don't have that piece of paper giving them things that they can kind of, you know, they just have to go with what the GM describes and just go for it. And, you know, and I've seen that more and more in the old school games I run, where players just want to do things. I mean, the systems themselves, like Old School Essentials, it doesn't have anything built in for jumping on the backs of dragons and stuff like that.
Because you die, that's
yeah,
why.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if a player said to me, I want to try and jump on the back of the dragon, I'd go, okay, you can do that. But before you do that, you got to face dragon breath and one bite and two claw attacks, and then you might have a chance of climbing on its back, you know. But I think, I mean, that to me is the appeal of systems that don't have skills.
But as I say, it's a very different, sorry Martin, I'm talking for
no,
you,
no,
it's got a, it's a very different sort of the load is different. So highly specified, it's codified, you've got less space to play. If you're coming from, you know, like, so I've got players who I've shifted over from 5e through to in Old School Essentials, same, you know, same scenario but different rule set, and that it's taken both of us, all of us actually, time to get up to speed saying, actually, what does it mean to be in this, playing in this quite an open permissive, is that the right word to say, but you've got high permission to be able to do things in the game, and that's a very different skill set. It's quite a hard thing to do, so I'd imagine it's probably quite hard to go from that to a more well-defined game as well.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back, I think, to talk about the... So I think you're right, Steve. Like, character generation is something you can do on your own. And if I've got like a bank holiday weekend free, there's nothing I like better than sitting down and rolling up a chivalry and sorcery character.
Just one, yeah, and the whole weekend.
Oh, just the one, yeah. I mean, I'm not mad, Steve. But I do think that it kind of, complex as that is, and I hear what you're saying about the kind of maybe slightly more permissive systems, but as complex as it is, I do feel it helps ground a character. So when I've gone through a bit of a session zero, I've come out the other end and I've got a clear idea of what my character can do and what they can't do. And so that helps me, I think, shape what I think they're going to be like. And I know damn well they're not going to jump on the back of a dragon. Or, you know, maybe one of them will one day. But generally speaking, I come to the table with a character where I think, okay, I know what these limits are. So there has been a certain amount of complexity that's gone on with that. I mean, RuneQuest, again, great example. I know who my grandmother was and where they fought, which, you know, might come up in conversation.
And does.
And does. Yeah. But I also have got a bit about my skills. And so when the game starts, fine. I'm not going to sit there pondering whether or not I can jump out of a tree onto a charging rhino, because I can look at my sheet and go, yep, actually, I already know that I can't, or it's a risk and I'll do it. So I think, so that complexity, although it is like a solo project very often, does then feed into your game enjoyment and how that complexity then, the complex character creation then feeds into a system that works with it and gives you some pointers on how your character works.
Yeah. I mean, you can go in depth in character creation. You can have a lot of background detail to your character. And so, for example, I think Barons of Lemuria, where you can have lots of skill groups, or, you know, you can go into a lot of detail, but those are then seen through a lens that'd be quite simple and straightforward. And in play, doesn't necessarily amount to a lot of complicated back and forth. So I think when we're thinking about complexity in system, it's how much processing you have to do to get to an outcome. So I'm thinking about Earthdawn, which in theory is a relatively simple system, but there are a lot of steps you have to go through. So you roll a dice, or a group of dice, you generate a number, and then you're against a threshold and you get an outcome. The steps you have to go through to get to that point are just fun killers.
So, okay, why do we play more complex games? Why do we not just play Prince Valiant and flip a coin? I mean, what do players get from greater complexity in game? Why is it there? I mean, Martin's already said it can help you define the character better because it's got more aspects. If you've just got six numbers, you know, there's less to tell the difference between that one and another one, though you can make up whatever you like about it.
I think it can feel more realistic. Or it can bring a sense of more realism, can bring sense of more control, perhaps, as well. It can feel like there's more depth, I guess. Probably the most complex game I've ever ran is Harm Master. I don't have it anymore, but I had it back in the day. And it had things in it, like when you created your characters, you had to do their star sign. And that would give you certain, you know, benefits. There was most of the characters were peasants. They were lucky to have a pitchfork, and combat was pretty deadly, from what I recall. I can't remember whether it was terribly convoluted. I just remember the character sheets had lots of tiny little boxes on to put numbers in, and you're like microscript handwriting. But the thing was that after combat, I remember this so clearly. I don't know any other game that's done it. Maybe I'm sure that they do. Is that you're more likely to die from an infection your character gets. So, you know, you might lose two hit points or two wounds or whatever. But, you know, God help you if that turns bad, because you're a goner, you know. And I just think, like, and there's that. So that's like kind of realistic. It did appeal to me at the time, but now I think,
but that's the point at the time, isn't it? So, you know, again, we've said, you know, back in the day, we wouldn't think about complexity in games. You just buy, in fact, the bigger the fatter the book or the box set, the happier you were, because you got more paper for your pound, didn't you, really? And then you go home and you would just force yourself to get to a certain level of knowledge, and then you play it and get all the rules wrong anyway. If you were to have a game nowadays that didn't, without any baggage, without any sort of sense of nostalgia, if Harn came up now with a different title or whatever, would you even think about it?
No. I mean,
nobody would, because it's horrible to play those sort of games, unless you're doing it for a particular experience.
I mean, against the Dark Master, I think, is a great example of that. It looks very appealing. Great memories of playing Mare. In fact, in Grogmeet last year, but back in the day again. But when I look at it and I just think, for me, a 700-page rule book is not a selling point, you know?
Not anymore.
Yeah, you know. But I think there's another thing to this, just an element we haven't touched on, which is another, I don't know if we're talking about complexity. Those systems we're talking about is complex and mechanically complex, with lots of niggly bits and rules, lots of connection. But you, on the other side, then on the far side of the like simpler OSR games, you've got these games that I consider to be narratively complex. So games where you've got bonds and you have various aspects to your character, and to me, I find that kind of hard work. Maybe it's not that complex, but I find it really hard work to come up with characters. When when I look at a game and it says, you must pick two relations with, two other characters and say why they're important to you, and one will be your strength and one will be your weakness, and you must. And I just think, I don't want that.
But when we play the One Ring and it talks about your fellowship focus and things like that, how does that feel? Because I don't get the sense that find that particular.
No, I don't. But then I don't have a fellowship. So I don't have a...
you hate everybody.
I think there's only one character that's got one in that group.
That's fair.
And I think it's... Sorry, Martin. Yeah. I think when you pick that, it's... I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, because I've seen you in Gumshoe whip up, like, Marv, your Korean War veteran buddy for your character there out of nowhere. So I think, I think you do yourself a disservice, Neil.
But perhaps like Marv, I'm good under pressure.
But like you say, narrative, I think narratively complex is a good phrase. So I'm not all about nostalgia. I like to look at new games. And so I kickstarted Nibiru couple of years ago, was it last year maybe? And I've picked it up and my head just started spinning. And I've put it back down again. And there's been some encouragement to pick it back up again, and I have just ignored that. Because it said to me, this is narratively complex, and the setting, beautiful and well realized, is just borderline gibberish to me. So I've had to just step back from it. And no doubt, maybe I've come at it from the wrong angle or whatever, but man, that to me is a game that sold itself on a simple system, and the mechanics do look quite simple, but the narrative complexity and the setting complexity just basically switched me off.
I think the narrative complexity is really important there, because because some games will make you a bit like RuneQuest. You found out what your grandmother did because you rolled on a table. Someone had done some work, and you basically worked your way through this table, and it gave you a lot of interesting results that you could then put together for your character. You didn't have to. Whereas sometimes, so you're looking at this, it's got 20 pages of tables, but actually you just work your way through them, and, it takes you a bit of time, and you get a story out at the other end. Whereas other ones that say, now, make up a story. And it's got to have this person and this person, this person, write an essay. Yeah, I think sometimes it's shorter on the page, but requires more brain work to come up with the outcome. I think it's a valid point, Neil.
So I suppose we've got games that are routine. We've got games that are routine, complicated, and complex, really. So I would put games like OSE, Old School Essentials, as a routine game. I mean, yes, in terms of rule set, in terms of actually how you use them in play, potentially it sort of edges over towards the sort of the middle part around being more complicated, complex. Then you've got games like Earth Dawn, for example, which I would definitely put in the complicated bit, because there's lots of, it's once you know the process, it's relatively easy to work through. And then you've got games on the complex side where actually it's quite simple in terms of rules, but in play you need an awful lot of headspace. So I would put Spire and Heart and, you know, Blades in the Dark on that side of thing, where actually it's simple, but you have to spend a lot of time thinking about it. And I think about my preference, and I think it shifts. I think, you know, I like a simple rule set that doesn't mean you have to do too much thinking in play.
This is really interesting. There's a lot of different complexities. I was looking at, you know, complexities as, you know, after my Aftermath experience, when Chris got me to work my way through Aftermath again and have a look at it. And that was my classic example of, you know, why were they doing this? What were they getting out of this? And actually, when you saw it, you could see why this simulationist thing actually made sense. And the other thing I quite like about complicated games is your ability to be a good player. You can, in the same way you can be a good chess player and a bad chess player, you can be a good Pathfinder player and a bad Pathfinder player. There are wrong decisions you can make in Pathfinder, you know, when you're making the character or when you're doing tactics in combat. And I mean, I think that's okay. I mean, no one would spend the afternoon playing noughts and crosses, because it wouldn't be interesting, it wouldn't engage your brain. Whereas we'll play complex war games or complex board games or complex role-playing games because we enjoy the puzzle aspect almost, and being able to say, okay, I want to do this. If I use that and I roll that high enough and then do this and then do that, bang! And you feel real intellectual triumph of getting that, which you maybe don't get from the DM just saying, yeah, cool, roll higher than a 10.
Yeah. I can see that, definitely. That's really, I mean, that competitive, or, you know, that overcoming the beating the system, I guess, or mastering the system. Yeah, I'm rubbish at that kind of stuff. So that
sort of verges into war gaming, then, doesn't it, really? Where, you know, or sort of being good at complicated board games. And that's one of the reasons why I play. That's one of the reasons why I like to play role playing games, because you can enjoy it without having to have that level of complexity.
But I think it's still a valid, he says, desperately defending himself here. But I think it's a valid urge to like complexity. But no, again, never it's valid. Interesting. But when I started playing HeroQuest, or Quest Worlds as it is, I suddenly felt hugely relaxed. I loved that, because I think if there is a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it, damn it, I'm going to do it the right way. I'm going to work out how to do it. I'm going to sit there. I'm going to crunch it. I'm going to do the numbers. I'm going to get the right way to do it. Whereas, you know, you're playing HeroQuest, and actually, you know what? There is, you know, there are wrong things to do, but it's actually what's interesting, not what's right. It's what's interesting at this time. And I found that just let me relax. And I think I've got a lot of this Barbarians of Lemuria when Neil ran that. I thought, wow, this is just... Actually, this combat is great. There's all sorts of exciting things are happening in this combat, but that's because all we're doing is rolling 2d6, and then we're narrating, you know, all the cool stuff that's happening on top of that, rather than the RuneQuest thing of, you know, did I hit? Where did I hit? How hard did I hit? How much armor have they got? Did they parry? What was the result of that? Where you're actually playing the game for the game to tell you what cool things happen.
I'm with Doc on this. I think complexity brings its own rewards with understanding and kind of just enjoying rules. And I suppose, I mean, one of the first books I read when I did my sort of like academic side of things was How to Have Fun with Rules, which is a book for law students. And, you know, I've really never looked back. And so some of those early games that I used to play were like basic, they were war games in all but name, or skirmish games. So, you know, if you start your life with Laser Burn or something like that, which, you know, I used to play, and then you develop, and then sometimes odd little stuff used to come along. I don't know if anyone ever had Merc. But that did have like one of those hit location tables that had like wrist on it and stuff and things like that. And yeah, it was very, very much like that. And we enjoyed that as well. But then that's, I think, because we'd come from the board game route and to some extent the war game route. And so that felt right. You know, that was the path we had chosen. Whereas maybe with mod games, you're coming at it from a slightly different route. So the more mod games I've played seem to me increasingly to be like video game kind of aesthetic. And, you know, that, so basically there might be a lot of numbers in the background, but your character is like you playing a first person shooter. You know, you're zapping away the buttons and making everything look cool. And I get that sense from some games now. Whereas, and maybe that's it. Maybe that's just a different way that people have entered a different path into TTRPGs, where mine was very much from war games and board games, and somebody else might be from video games now. Yeah. And there's a different level of expectations of what you do when you mash the buttons of the system.
That makes a lot of sense, I think, because my entry into games through literature, Lord of the Rings, so I never had... My brother was into military modelling, and he used to get this magazine. He was kind of into that, but it never appealed to me at all, that like hardcore military. But once I started, when I read Lord of the Rings, you know, mind blown, realised there were these games. And so when I came to it, I never thought of it as a I don't know when it was I realized that it did have its roots in war gaming. To me, it was just a very clever game that actually I struggled with at first. But yeah, and I suppose my expectations of it were never about that rule complexity, or not expectations, but that was never part of it.
Well, I came into it from war gaming in the first instance. So I started off with things like Laserburn, et cetera, et cetera. And just because of, you know, a lack of people to RPG with, sort of fell into war games. And then a few years ago, sort of bemoaning the fact that I couldn't tell stories with war games, I thought, is there something out there that allows me to tell stories? And yet, all roll dice. And shockingly, there was role playing. But for me, it was an escape from war gaming, really, in terms of the need to be... Rules mastery is critical in war games. You know the rules. You can beat somebody who's got a far inferior army, actually. And I struggled with that because it was such an amount of, intellectual work to do that. Whereas I find in RPGs generally, you know, as long as you can, you know, you're playing with the right sort of people, or the people that I like to play with, you're quite free and open with that sort of stuff. So you can still have fun. You can still, you know, tell a story, you know, use the rules to simulate or to narrate a world. But it means you don't have to have that level of rule complexity to have fun. There's nothing worse than playing a war game and getting absolutely mullered and get, because you just didn't know a particular rule. So the flanking rule in Warmaster Ancients, if you didn't know that, you were dead, basically. So, you know, there you go. So that's where I came from.
But I think the wargaming thing is definitely an issue. Look, I mean, we've been saying, oh, well, in the old days, it was, you know, the old school stuff is simpler. I've just put a link up there for a 20-page document on how to do initiative in AD&D, because it's actually spectacularly complicated in AD&D. It's just everyone ignored it. Everyone ignored the rules in AD&D, I think is a key thing. Nobody played all the rules in AD&D because it was just, you know, everyone took bits and pieces. I absolutely love it. It's an incredible document, you know, that they've gone through all the Player's Handbook, DMG, all these things, and everything that's been said, they put it in there so you can follow it through. Yeah, no.
I'll post it in the show notes. I will.
I going back to back in the day and things like the 30-page document of initiative, I don't know about, you know, if this is a common experience, but I think to start with in those early years, I'd be making games more complicated.
Yeah.
You know, I want more. I wanted more tables.
Yeah.
I wanted more things to roll on. I wanted more weapons. I wanted more stats.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so now it's like, now saying that out loud, so it makes you sound like a pervert.
But it was fine in the 70s.
But back then, it was all okay, officer.
Like many things.
But you know what I mean?
You're absolutely right.
I spend my time making games more complicated.
I still do that because I was, I tweeted about this in that my D&D game group, you know, have nightmares about challenges of skills because I won't let them just roll a persuasion check to see if the Lizard Queen will go with them. There's all these different aspects they have to think about and different modifiers, and, you know, they've got to do this roll to try and help that thing. And this, it turns into a sort of mini subsystem. And I love creating mini subsystems. And I know it's, and again, that's just the way my mind works, because then I can see, you know, you've got interesting choices to make. I want, because I think saying, okay, is the Lizard Queen going to work, you know, work with you? You've got to get higher than DC 20. You go, well, you roll the dice and it's either high or it's not. And I mean, absolutely. I mean, Neil's nodding smugly. Of course, yeah. You ask people to describe what they're saying and you give them some bonuses from that point of view. Of course you do. You don't just make them roll. But in the end, they roll a dice and it's either high or it's not. Whereas if it's a bit more, they could do this and somebody else could help them by doing this and this was an option. It gives more choices, which I know I feel more interesting. So I'm with you, Martin. Mm.
Certainly more complicated.
Definitely more complicated. I think we've described around it. Do we want to describe what level of game hits our particular sweet spot? Is it always the same one? Or, you know, what makes us sometimes like one or the other? Why don't we start with Neil anyway? Because, we know what he's going to say.
Well, so a recent experience I had. So, you know, I love my old school games. OSE is my current favourite. And for Grogmeat, I decided to run something a bit different. So I ran this game called Vikinger. So that's the word Viking with an R on the end. I don't know if I pronounced it right. And it's open D6. It's not a complex game. In fact, it's a really good game. It's a very good game. But just by doing that, I gave myself a lot more work to do because I felt like I had to prep the players a bit more. So we had a pre-game session and enjoyed it. But it made me realize that the other thing with it, there's complexity and there's familiarity as well. And I think for a con game, I would pretty much always now, I think, do something that's either really, really simple or some D&D based. Because you know that when you turn up at the table, people are just going to get it. You know, I don't think I've ever met a gamer who doesn't understand how to play, that kind of game with all its flaws. In terms of your question, though, Doc, in terms of what I prefer in terms of levels of complexity, I don't like much more than OSE. There's a game I was looking at called Worlds Without Number, which I recently backed. And it's similar to Swords and Wizardry, but has quite a bit more to it. And I don't know if that's too much for me, you know. Mm. I think an ideal game, a game I think is probably a perfect game, the closest thing in terms of complexity and the way the system works, probably would be Barbarians of Lemuria or the generic version of that. I just think it's absolutely fantastic. And it's so easy. And we were saying before, it just does what it needs.
Okay. Who's next?
Cool.
Shall
I go?
As always with these things, both people wave simultaneously, but I'm the boss, so I'm going to go with Martin. And you know, as it's Steve's podcast, okay, and he can edit himself to put in first anyway if he wants to.
I think mine's really simple. Is that I'm always going to default to a D100 system. I think percentile rolling is just intuitive. If somebody tells me I've got a 75% chance of doing something in real life, I know that, you know. And so I think D100 absolutely every time. So anything BRP, Cthulhu, RuneQuest at the high level of complexity, Cthulhu at the lower end of complexity, that's me. I'm very happy with that within that kind of bracket. I've enjoyed running Gumshoe, but that's deceptively simple. That tricks you. Gumshoe tricks you into, it's a D6. Well, that's okay. And then you've got like 9 pages of modifiers. So, you know, with Cthulhu, to be honest, I think 7th edition Cthulhu is probably a step too far in complexity. I think it's, you know, it's still great. Love it. But, you know, I was perfectly happy with 5th edition, really. That's me.
All right. Steve?
Thanks, Doc. Well, from my perspective, I don't know. Interestingly, okay. So I tend to get a lot of games, tend to buy games, and I enjoy reading systems and just sort of thinking about that. And part of that is also running the systems in play. So I will pick up games that, as long as they engage me, interesting, you know, an interesting concept, I will run them. Also, if there are games that I particularly have got an attraction to, or an attachment to, like Earthdawn, I'll run those as well. But as I'm going through those games, I'm tagging them with, would I run them again? And increasingly, games that I wouldn't run again are ones that require an awful lot of thinking in play. I'm torn about Spire. I like it. I really like it. I think it, but probably judged by my manic performance the last time we played, it requires a lot of thought to keep things on track. So I will happily run any game. If I'm going to repeat run games, then it will be something like RuneQuest, I think, or something of that level of complexity, or if developing a real attachment for OSE and that sort of stuff, just because it's got enough scaffolding to enable to make decisions quickly, but also gives a lot of freedom in that as well. And I think so RuneQuest and OSE are probably hit that sweet spot for me for different reasons. So,
well,
there you go.
What about you, Doc? The first thing, I mean, we've talked about the different aspects of complexity, and, you know, let's start with a simple one. I mean, the complex background, and this is so hypocritical. I love Glorantha. If someone comes up with a new game with a complex background, a complex setting, that puts me off. And that's, you know, so I totally get it when people say Glorantha seems a bit much, but I think it's just because it's soaked into my bones that, you know, it's now it's there, it's fine.
DNA,
and I do
now,
understand, you know, because people, I mean, I'm just looking around at settings books around me, you know, 300 page settings books. You think, oh, so level of complexity in the setting, which is why real world games are often, you know, or swords and sorcery, you know, simple things from that point of view are great. Your point about how much thinking there is. Yes, Heart and Spire, they were so different because it's trying to work out what can't I do, almost. What can I do that's not just, you know, because in D&D you can always fall back and say, well, I hit it with my longsword. But in Spire, oh my God, I've got to come up with something awesome. And it was, you know, it was, so yes, I think that's a really good point.
Exhausting.
I mean, just being able to say, you know, 17 hit, 14 damage, you know, sometimes that just gives you a bit of a break sometimes. So, in terms of actual complexity of the system, honestly, I don't think I can answer that because I think, I love with some people who also love the complexity and the system mastery and bouncing off each other and playing, you know, with more complicated rules. I love doing that. As I said, Barbarians of Lemuria, playing it with Neil, absolute eye-opener. Quest Worlds, playing with Ian Cooper, absolute eye-opener. You know, it's just a different way of looking at things. So I think, I don't know, it's, the, you know, having set up this entire thing about complexity, it's, you know, almost a red herring in terms of which one do I like more than others. But because you would be disappointed if I didn't say it, the D100 system, I agree with Martin that it actually works brilliantly in terms of knowing what you can do. But I think it falls into the trap of too many skills. Too many skills, really. You know, it's just you've got 70 skills and it does sometimes frustrate me because I've got 90% in charm and I've got 60% in, something else, charisma, accounting. In terms of talking to people, I've got 90% in one, 70% in another, and 25% in another. And you just think, oh, well, I'm never going to use that. It's just complicated for reasons. So in the end, my answer is I love all levels of complexity.
That's a cop out if ever I heard one.
Cut it there, Steve. Cut it there. That was an excellent ending. It made me sound wise and thoughtful, and people are going to go. I think a lot of people are going to be nodding their heads now and thinking that's a very, very zen answer, Doc.
They will be. Yeah. Or
possibly throwing.
It was.
Or throwing things is the other one. That was really cool. That was it.
No,
I mean we're never ever going to get to the bottom of these to a firm answer, and that's why we do it. It's because we like to chew these things over and then come to no comprehensive conclusion. But great.
Cheers,
well, thank you. I found it really interesting. There are lots of things I hadn't thought about there. The mental load stuff with Heart, I hadn't thought about, but it's just really high mental load.
It is.
Sometimes I think Steve's just going to
knackering.
Just have to mop his brow.
It's knackering. You can tell by the wild-eyed staring expression of my face and gesticulating. Yeah. It's really hard work. But that's why I gave up running Scum and Villainy. I mean, I'm enjoying Spire far more than Heart far more than I enjoyed that game because I just stopped half of them said, I can't run this anymore. It's doing my head in. I'm not enjoying it. I'm having nightmares about the game coming up, put it that way. But I think, yeah, it is exhausting. And just as an addendum. So we had Spire the one night, Wednesday. The following night was the One Ring. And you could argue it's a far more complex system because there's lots of sub things going on there. It's completely different, utterly relaxed, you know, smooth, easy, you know, not everyone knows the system, but it's just that you don't feel like the mental load is there.
Thanks for listening to another exploration of my gaming vexes. If you've got any thoughts you'd like to add to what you've heard here, or a gaming vex of your own you'd like to offer up for discussion, you can contact me on Twitter at AllAnthar, or you can leave a voice message. The link's on the podcast webpage on Anchor, or can be found in the show notes. Until the next time, may all your games be free of vexatiousness, and be excellent to each other, always.